The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Horror and the assault on the senses of it. It's not the kind of thing that where you read the first couple and you think, well, I can see why he went for that as a career.
Yeah, but in saying that, like, you know, there's always, when you go to a crime scene that, you know, may have, you know, gruesome aspects to it, you're only human, so you're always going to get that initial assault on the senses. But very quickly, you go into a business mode or a work mode way of thinking. You
do
know?
You're able to put the emotions to one
side?
Yeah,
like, I mean, it's the same with the whole team that would be there, because you're there to do a job, and you get the initial shock to the senses over with, and then you're down to work, and it can be extremely interesting, like, you know. So, you know,
and are there ones that linger with you afterwards? Are there particular cases or incidents that break that barrier?
Personally, for me, no, not really. Like, I don't lie awake at night and think about a particular scene or anything like that. I've seen my fair share of awful crime scenes, but not nearly as much as many of my colleagues have. But in saying that, it don't take it away with you, like, you know, because you're there to do a job, you're very busy, and, you know, the crime scene is only one aspect of an investigation, because you're gathering evidence which has to be processed then back at base, or, you know, back in the bureau, as it was. And again, you could be waiting a couple of years before the ultimate part of the investigation, being presentation of evidence in court, comes around. So, you know, you don't really have time to dwell on it, because you might be finished one and next you're out on another one, you know.
You then moved into various different areas of sort of specialism and specific expertise. First amongst them was fingerprint expertise.
Yes, I was very lucky in that I got into the fingerprint section with, you know, relatively little service in the Guards. I had only 4 years service, and I spent 10 years in fingerprints, which was fantastic. You know, they provide all the training. They send you over to the UK to get, you know, your final exams and stuff like that. You're learning on the job all the time, be it assisting with, you know, more senior members and stuff like that, as well as processing, you know, volume exhibits from, you know, burglaries and stuff like that, that would be brought in from scenes of crime people all over the country. So, you know, you're always learning, and even every time you pick up a fingerprint or a crime scene mark, you're still learning, like, you know. But I found it fantastic. It
was. And how much can you infer into a fingerprint? Is it simply the ownership of it, or can you tell by the shape and pressure of it how the hand was being used or what was being done?
Well, it would depend on the surface where the finger mark would be what we would refer to a crime scene mark. But it would depend on what the finger mark was made on. You know, if it was gripped around, say, the handle of something, you could kind of make an idea of or get a picture of which finger it was, or if there's a sequence of fingers there, or if they're inverted, say, at the point of entry, maybe somebody climbing in a window. You know, so that just helps to maybe nominate a particular finger or digit or whatever. But it's the detail within the fingerprint that is unique, and that's what the identification is made from.
Do you ever get people with no fingerprints?
Well, there's nobody born with no fingerprints. Like, you know, there are, you know, people may purposely try to destroy their fingerprints with, you know, maybe some kind of acid or corrosive material or something like that. But, but very often the fingerprints will always come back unless there's a really deep-seated injury. Say a burn or a really deep cut that would affect, you know, the base layer of the skin. But then, even with that, like, a scar on a fingerprint becomes a unique feature itself, you know. Like, my dad was a farmer, and, you know, his hands were destroyed from working out in the fields all the time. And I remember we had the house broken into years ago, and he had to provide his fingerprints for elimination purposes, but they couldn't get fingerprints from him because his hands were in such bad nick. But when he retired, they all came back, like, you know. So unless there's a deep injury, they'll always be there.
You moved from fingerprints then into both document analysis and handwriting. And yes, you're very interesting in some of the attempts that people make to counterfeit things. And the level of technical sophistication that there is in things like currency and documentation created, temperature sensitive ink and embedded characters that only show up under certain light.
Yeah, like, I mean, the whole idea of having a document or something that's of value, be it monetary value or, say, in the case of passports and stuff like that, you know, that will enable travel. The counterfeiters will always try to imitate all the security features that are in any given document, say a 50 euro note. So technology is constantly moving forward. So the companies that produce secure documents are always bringing along new security features. And then the counterfeiters will try to imitate
that. And who's winning that race at the moment? Because I would have thought that the technology available in printing now has advanced so much for the home user that it must be easier and easier for counterfeiters.
Not necessarily, because the technology is moving forward for the, you know, the genuine manufacturers as well. And they will always have the technology before, you know, any would-be counterfeiters. And like, even when I mentioned the 50 euro note, the amount of security features that are in that, some of them may be easy to imitate, maybe ultraviolet ink or, you know, certain kind of printing techniques. But there's also an awful lot of security features in a 50 euro note or any other secure document that aren't cost effective for a counterfeiter to attempt. And the whole point of making a counterfeit is that it doesn't cost you as much as the real thing, you know.
The other thing that you do is you give a breakdown then of, when you mention ultraviolet light, the how people tamper with things like checks and what you can read into somebody's handwriting in terms of little things. Like, for instance, the pressure matters. It's not just how they form the words, it's the level of pressure they use on the paper.
Pressure can be it can be a factor when you're looking at handwriting from a handwriting identification point of view, because, you know, very often if somebody's trying to imitate somebody else's writing or somebody else's signature, they might slow down and give more pressure, something like that, but that will affect the fluency of it. So that can be a red flag. And then if they speed up to try to capture the fluency, then the accuracy might go. So again, every handwriting case or every signature case is different, like, you know, as all our handwritings are different, like, you know.
And you can also tell, I mean, you have a couple of lovely examples in the book where you show words, for instance, on checks that have been doctored. You've one where VAT is turned into Natalie. Mm-hmm. And at first glance, it would be impossible to tell that it was doctored, but you can actually find the timing of when it was done and separate the two inks.
Possibly not so much the timing, but you can certainly, if two different inks have been used, you know, you could differentiate between them using certain light sources, say infrared, because you can maybe try to make out what ink was laid over what, but really once you see that there's two inks somewhere, you know something's wrong, you know. And, you know, you don't even have to explain it to a jury, because when you show a picture of two inks reacting differently, it tells its own story, like, you know.
What has the legacy of all of this investigation been for you personally? Are you left very cynical? Are you suspicious of everybody at every turn?
Well, some people would say I've always been cynical. There is some aspect of that, you know, like, I mean, even back years ago when I'd be talking about certain subjects, people would say to me, oh, that's Garda talk now, you're talking Garda stuff. But there is a certain level of cynicism that you do generate over the years. But in saying that, like, you know, any guards that I know, they're not morose, serious people going around complaining about everything, like, you know. But there is that little level of cynicism.
Lastly, did you ever see any of the counterfeiting attempts and think, that's very clever?
There's some counterfeit attempts have been quite good, you know. People would say, is there such a thing as a perfect counterfeit? But if there was, you wouldn't be able to identify it. So I don't know. But I've seen certain things that were done very well, but then some things that are so bad that you wonder why they even bothered, like, you know.
Well, best of luck with the sales of the book. It is called Identity, Murder, Fraud and the Making of a Garda Forensic Expert, and it's available in all good bookshops and online. The author is John Sweetman. John, thanks again.
Thank you very much, Anthony. Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Coming up later.